Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. Now, as President Trump talks taxes on his visit to Minnesota, we're going to ask why so many Americans are underwhelmed by his tax cut. A recent Wall Street Journal poll found that 28% of Americans believe they're paying more under tax reform. Just 17% said they're paying less. And a whole lot of Americans just aren't sure. That's not much political bang for the buck, is it, given that the tax cuts cost $1.5 trillion and given how the U.S. deficit ballooned? That could be why Elizabeth Warren is advocating for a new surcharge on corporations. She's arguing that companies that make over $100 million in earnings should pay a 7% surcharge on the money. We'll talk about that, too. So I want to hear what you think of all of this as our guests join us. Do you feel like you have more spending money in your paycheck thanks to the tax cuts? Did you feel like you needed a tax cut? Was this money well spent by Congress and the president? And I'd like to know, we'll get to the Elizabeth Warren surcharge here, but maybe you have a thought on that, this idea of surcharge for highly profitable companies. How does this feel in your own household budget? Do you feel like you needed a tax cut? 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, on Twitter, at Carrie NPR. Caroline Bruckner is with us. She's managing director of COGOD Tax Policy Center at American University and with us from D.C. Carolyn, welcome. Good to have you on the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Carl Davis is with us. He's the research director at the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy. It's a nonprofit, nonpartisan policy organization with us from Springboro, Ohio. Carl, welcome to you. Good to have you on the show.
Yeah, thanks. Glad to be here.
Carolyn, couple of nuts and bolts questions on the GOP tax cuts. Corporations got a big tax cut, and as I understand it, that is permanent. What have corporations done with the additional money? Do we know?
We are still analyzing, but an initial analysis of corporations who are listed on the S&P Stock Exchange has shown that about there's been a 55% increase in stock buybacks by those companies, which indicates that a lot of the narrative about companies using those tax cuts to buy back their stock is actually true. But there's also been a slightly bigger increase in those same companies investing in manufacturing and plant expansions in the U.S. By about 14% under that same analysis. So that's some good news. But we're going to have to wait and see for more data to roll in because those corporations are still paying their taxes.
Yeah, Carl, just to linger on this for a minute. The idea was that if corporations paid less taxes and we had a very high tax rate compared to countries and the rest of the world, that they mostly would, or the hope was, that they would pour it into hiring more employees, buying more equipment. I hear Carolyn saying a lot of them have used it to buy their stock. That wasn't the idea, was it?
Yeah, but unfortunately, it's the truth. I mean, a lot of it's going into stock buybacks or it's going into dividend payments. And this is, of course, flowing to corporate shareholders. And we know that the vast majority of corporate shares in this country are held by high-income people. About a third of them are actually held by foreign individuals. So a lot of this corporate tax cut is actually flowing to foreign investors as well, not even staying inside the country. So, unfortunately, the share going to workers and ordinary folks is not very significant. And this was predicted by a lot of folks before the bill was enacted, and it's turning out to be the reality.
Carl, just a note here that the institute that you work for reported that at least 60 companies will pay zero income tax. And some of those companies are some pretty familiar brand names, Amazon, Netflix, Eli Lilly, and more. How in the heck does that happen when they make the kind of profits that they do?
Well, there are a combination of things going on. There are, well, this was billed as a tax reform. It still left a huge number of tax incentives or tax loopholes on the books. And so things like accelerated depreciation, the research and development credit, stock option tax breaks. There's just a host of tax breaks that companies can still use to pay a rate that's lower than the headline rate written into the law. The other thing that's happening is companies are still continuing to be very aggressive in moving profits offshore on paper into countries like the Cayman Islands and Bermuda. I mean, U.S. companies are claiming that they earned an amount of money in the Cayman Islands that is 12 times the size of that country's entire economy. So this is just clearly impossible. Oh. We see similar things in Bermuda and other countries. They're claiming all their money is just so happening to be earned in places that have no corporate income tax or a very low corporate income tax. And that points to a fundamental problem here with pursuing a corporate tax cut as a way to make the U.S. competitive with other countries. Well, it turns out that a lot of the countries we're competing with from a tax perspective just so happen to have 0% rates. So how are you going to compete with 0%? Are we really not going to have a corporate income tax at all? 0% is going to be lower than 35%. It's lower than 21%. No matter what you do, these companies are still going to be looking for ways to move their money offshore. And then they're doing so aggressively. I mean, that's part of the story.
Carolyn, we've talked about this numerous times here because Medtronic did a merger with an Irish company, and then they kind of put the headquarters, the tax headquarters right offshore. Is it too soon to tell whether this is going to stop some of that, or is Carl right when he says they're still going to find ways around it?
There's always going to be an entire industry in the United States dedicated to making money by helping public companies lower their tax bills, and that's completely legal. And I think that he's making a very strong, strong point that we are competing with countries who have low to no corporate tax rates and are attractive to American companies moving their operations offshore. That's always been the case. What is interesting about what happened in corporate tax reform is that you have to really separate it out and tax reform on a whole into three different buckets. You have what happened to individual taxpayers, what happened to corporate taxpayers, and then what happened to corporate taxpayers that have extensive international operations. And those companies are subject to a new tax scheme that purports to be more fair and more competitive on a global scale with global tax rates. But we're going to have to see if and that part of tax reform was actually paid for. And so we'll have to see if it actually works as it's intended to force U.S. companies to pay more of their fair share of their tax on their international operations. And it's going to be a little bit of time before we get the full data in. But there certainly was an effort on the international tax side to try to stop some of the international arbitrage that's been going on.
We're also asking listeners this morning, and we've got a lot of listeners on the phone lines here, about how this tax cut feels to you now that you've done your taxes. Presumably you know how this is going to affect your overall budget. So I'm curious about whether you feel like you had more money in your paycheck because this was incremental. Do you feel like you needed a tax cut? 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828 on Twitter, where Naomi says, our two-income solidly middle-class family of four was hit hard this year, had to pay a lot in since our withholdings weren't enough. We are not happy. Matt says, everyone realizes that you pay taxes through the year, right? It's not just the extra one at the end. So I think addressing the incremental nature of this tax cut. And then to Bob in St. Paul, how did this feel to you, Bob? Hi.
Well, I pulled up 2017 tax return and 2018 tax return to confirm my suspicion.
Yeah.
We're on fixed income, Social Security and pension. So income really, without distributions figured, does not change, goes up a little bit. Our income dropped $9,335 this year because we didn't take an IRA distribution compared to last tax season. Our taxes, however, went up $1,144. That is a 27% increase in taxes. And the reason being, you look quickly to the itemized deductions of 17, which are no longer allowed, to the standardized deduction in 18. That's where the difference was made. And it was no secret that the McConnell-Ryan-Trump tax plan was targeting, in a negative way, blue states, which tend to have higher, like home mortgage deduction interest and
Bob,
so forth.
Let me get to that. Bob, I appreciate that. I appreciate the numbers there, and you've raised a really good point here. Carl, that is indeed right, isn't it? If you live in a higher tax state, Minnesota, you may end up on the wrong side of not being able to itemize those state and local property taxes, some of the other deductions. Do I have that right?
Yes, that's right. I mean, Bob's situation is slightly unusual, but it's definitely it illustrates a key point here. In blue, this was a bill that was not tilted in favor of blue states. This is definitely a bill tilted in favor of red states, meaning that you are more likely to see a tax increase if you live in states like Minnesota or New York or New Jersey. And even if you get a tax cut, it's probably going to be smaller in a state like Minnesota than it will be in some of these other states, because one of the biggest pay-fors for these business tax breaks was capping the state and local tax deductions. So your state and local tax write-off is not going to be as valuable as it used to be. Most folks are still getting tax cuts, but they're definitely designed in such a way that that the bulk of those cuts are flowing into red states. And that has something to do with the partisan makeup of Congress at the time that this bill was enacted.
Here's Alicia on Twitter who says, my paycheck increased by less than $20 and my refund was cut in half. That's a big deal for my family of four. Our gross income was about the same, so losing our deductions hurt. Carolyn, I wanted to ask you about this. I was looking at some numbers from the Tax Policy Center. It said a majority of taxpayers on the lower end of the income arc will see less than $1,000 savings in their taxes. If you space that out over paychecks, it's no wonder. I mean, you know, if you're in the $800, $900 range and you just space that out over, let's say, 26 paychecks, you're probably not going to notice that, especially because healthcare has, you know, other things are rising. What's your assessment of that?
I think that's really important. And the latest data from the IRS itself is showing that average refunds are down by about $31, right? That's not as bad as some of the initial assessments that were coming out in January and February. Now the IRS has caught up from the January furlough and started to process more and more returns. There are still about 50 million returns outstanding. But the reality is that average refunds are down. And that's super problematic because people, there's a lot of research out there that shows that people take their big refund check and they use it. The number one thing that they use it on is healthcare spending.
Interesting.
People put off making significant out-of-pocket healthcare spending until they get their big refund check, and then they go spend it. Almost 60% in the week after receiving a tax refund, that you see a spike in healthcare spending. So that's really problematic. And when you combine that with they eliminated the individual mandate, which is the penalty that taxpayers pay for not having health care insurance, that has already shown to trigger a 6% increase in health care premium increases for the year. That's directly attributable to the repeal of the individual mandate, which was part of tax reform.
You know, as I listen to you describe that, I think that has got to be uniquely American. Right, that we take refunds and go spend it on healthcare. Is a lot of this elective kind of stuff, or what are people doing with those tax refunds when it comes to healthcare?
Well, some of the data that I've looked at has shown that you put off getting dental surgery, which might not be fully covered by your healthcare insurance.
Wow.
You know, getting a tooth pulled, getting a cavity filled, or you know, elective healthcare that you might otherwise not be covered by a health insurance plan, you use your tax refund to pay for it.
Call here from Phil in Roseville. Hi, Phil. How does this look to you?
Good morning. I make the same amount of money in the last 3 years and I don't do any deductions. I'm not a homeowner and all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. What happened to mine was what I saw in my paycheck was almost negligible, but I look at, as I'm paying, anything that they paid me during the month or during the pay scale is now being taken, because I usually get, and it's, you know, she said $31. I usually get $500 or $600. I don't, you know, just a little bit back, and it got cut in just over half in what I returned. So I went, oh, now I see where they're paying for it, because I didn't pay for it during the year, but now I'm paying for
okay,
it.
Okay, wait
a
minute, Phil. I'm trying to understand this. You did get more in your paycheck, but you got half of the refund back. Is that what you're saying?
Less than half.
Less
the more
than
I
half.
Got my paycheck was maybe $8 or $10.
Got it. Okay. So, Carl, come in on this, if you would, about the incremental nature of the tax cut, and then how Americans experience this if you're used to a refund. Is that part of the reason why the polling has been so underwhelming?
Yeah. So, I mean, we ran the numbers in Minnesota, and for a family smack dab in the middle of the income distribution, it's about $60,000 of income a year. This is a tax cut of about $800 on average, and that works out to $15 a week. So you're getting $15 a week
Got
more,
it.
And the question is,
okay,
how much of that is going to show up in your paycheck, and how much of that in the form of reduced withholding, and then how much of it are you going to get back at the end of the year? And so if withholding gets cut by too much and they give you more than $15 in your paycheck every week, well, then your refund is going to be smaller at the end of the year. So it's the balancing act between what happened to the withholding and the refunds. And so there's some there's a little bit of a learning curve here while because it's tough to adjust these withholding tables to be exactly accurate. Everybody's situation is a little different. You're never going to have perfect withholding where the government withholds exactly the right amount from your paycheck.
Right.
Putting this into context, we're talking about for a middle-income family, like I said, $15 a week. But, you know, this is going to vary hugely by income level. So
right.
If you're a low-income family, for example, you say average income about $16,000 or so, which would put you near the poverty line, you're looking at a tax cut of $120 a year, $10
wow.
a month. It's going to be too little to even notice.
Yeah.
And then, of course, as you go up the income distribution, the story becomes very, very different. The top 1% of earners in Minnesota, we estimated, would get an average tax cut of $37,000 on these returns that they just filed. So they're getting a tax cut that's larger than many families' entire incomes. So how you experience this bill, it's partly tied up in do you happen to live in a red state or a blue state, and it's partly tied up, or it's very much tied up in how much income do you make, because the wealthier you are, the bigger the cut is. No doubt about that.
Rebecca says on Twitter, I'd rather have affordable health care and quality education than a few extra bucks in my paycheck. The 1% are the only ones benefiting. I wanted to ask you this, Carolyn, what in light of what Carl just said, do you think that middle class Americans still need a tax cut, that tax cuts aimed at the middle class would be more effective, maybe in the form of a tax credit? Or do you look at our overall tax policy and say, you know, what we really ought to be focused on is winding back some of these corporate tax cuts, given what corporations are doing with them? How would you assess this, I guess?
Well, I mean, that's an equity argument, right? And the idea behind the tax bill was that 65% of taxpayers got a tax cut, 6% paid more in taxes, and 29% didn't experience any change.
Okay.
And that's on the individual side of what happened with tax reform. Now, on the corporate side, they got a major tax break from 35% down to 21%, and that cost $1.5 trillion in and of itself.
Wow.
And so the question is, are we spending our tax dollars in a way that's going to generate more revenue to pay for health care and education and all those sorts of things, or are we not? Now, keep in mind, even before the tax cut, corporations only paid, you know, somewhere between 12 to 9% of all the revenues that we took in to fund our government.
Because
it's a
very of all the
small
other
part of the pie.
Okay, because of all the other ways that you can, like what Amazon does with taking deductions through equipment depreciation, that kind of stuff.
Right. Individuals and payroll taxes, which weren't touched as part of tax reform, that's the largest source of where we get our revenues to fund our government. And we're still short, right? We still spend more than we raise through revenues.
Right.
And we have an annual deficit that, you know, just spiked again because of the tax bill and the 2018 spending bill. And the question is, you know, in terms of equity, who should be paying for that difference? Should it happen on the individual side or should it happen on the corporate side? And the thinking was, well, corporations tend to create more jobs and that's going to create more economic activity. So therefore, we're going to give corporations the bigger, you know, tax cut and we'll just do something smaller on the individual side. And
but
how that plays out is up to the voters.
I mean, we said at the beginning, is that a good exchange so far? Many corporations have bought back stock. We don't know in the out years what they're going to do with it. Carolyn Bruckner with us this morning, if you've just gotten in on the discussion about taxes, managing director of the Tax Policy Center at American University, and Carl Davis with us, research director at the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy. And your views and experience here in this discussion, as the president comes to Minnesota today to talk taxes, we're getting a look at how you feel about and whether you are, as a majority of Americans, not all, a majority of Americans telling polling researchers that they are kind of underwhelmed by the effects of this big GOP tax cut. So asking you this morning for your experience with that, 651-227-6000. Was the money that Congress and you, the taxpayers, essentially invested in this worth it? 800-242-2828, and on Twitter at Carrie NPR to Lisa in Minneapolis. Hi, Lisa. Thanks for waiting.
Hi, Carrie.
Hi.
Thanks. Hi.
How's this
look
to you?
Everything Carl just described is pretty much exactly how we went through it, and we scrambled before the end of last year because there was all this, well, if you pay your property taxes early, you won't get a big
yes,
hit.
Yes, right.
We scrambled and did that thinking, well, maybe that would help because we typically use our returns to help pay for property taxes.
Uh-huh.
Well, that didn't happen in addition to the little increase every week because we thought, well, we'll just see what happens. And it really didn't even amount to even half of what our return typically is.
Hmm.
So it's really hard to figure out like how all this benefited us. And now we can't write off our mileage and things, you know, when you're self-contracting, all those things that you would typically have been able to write off.
Yeah, Lisa, can I ask you where you are on the income spectrum? I mean, would you say middle class, you know, upper, low income? How would you define that?
I would say right in the middle.
Okay.
And we do live in a higher tax area, so mm-hmm. that, you know, kind of just mixes into it not being good for us. And, you know, I have working children who are kind of in the lower class, and they seem to be getting somewhat of returns, so it's like, well, it's not all bad, but it definitely feels like either the lower class or the, you know, the top earners, getting the big returns.
I appreciate the call, Lisa. Thank you. Adriana called in St. Paul to say, the work I do is a freelance work, so the corporation I work for is giving us fewer hours these days because of taxes. Also, we used to use the reimbursed expenses credit, and now we can't. That was our tax return. It didn't work for me. I want to come back to you, Carolyn and Carl, to ask you about something I mentioned in the introduction, which is Elizabeth Warren's prescription of a surcharge as an effective way to address the situation with corporate taxes. Carl, what's your view on that? Is that a good way to get at this?
I think it's the start of a very valuable discussion. I mean, to be clear what this is a 7% charge on companies with profits, not revenue, but actual profits, over $100 million per year.
Mm-hmm.
So this is only going to affect very, very large and profitable companies. I mean, there's a couple problems that she's trying to get at with this. The one is that corporations that are often highly profitable and brag to their shareholders about how profitable they are, whenever the tax man comes around, they end up spinning the exact opposite story and saying, you know, oh, no, after investments and expenses and everything else, we don't actually have that much profit after all, and so there's nothing for you to tax. So they're telling two different stories. They tell their shareholders they have lots of profit. They tell the IRS there's nothing there. And so she would say, well, what you're telling your shareholders, there must be some amount of truth in that. And so we're going to apply this, you know, fairly modest 7% rate to that. The other thing that this would get at is that it would be taxing worldwide income as opposed to only income in the U.S. So these problems that we were talking about before, where companies are claiming, oh, well, all our money is earned in Bermuda, or all our money is in Luxembourg or wherever else. Those kind of games wouldn't work under this tax, and they would have to pay the tax anyway. Now, I don't think this is the kind of tax base you'd want to base the entire corporate income tax code around, and that's not what she's proposing. She's proposing keeping the current corporate income tax with its, you know, incentives and refinements and its quirks.
Right.
But then saying this, putting this in place as a backstop, and saying if you're reporting enormous $100 million plus profits to your shareholders, well, we're going to make sure you're paying something in federal tax. That's the idea here.
And Carolyn, that's the other thing I want to ask you. Does she have the threshold right, presuming that she could even, you know, she was elected and she could get this going in Congress? Is the threshold of $100 million right?
Well, I mean, it would affect probably about 1,200 companies. And, you know, what I think is more quite dubious is how much she thinks it's going to raise.
Ah.
It also adds complexity, right? Which, you know, it might be a more expedient strategy to do what Amy Klobuchar has recommended, which is just go back and increase the corporate tax rate, right, from 21% back up to 25%, knowing that, you know, if you're not going to change the underlying provisions of the tax code that allow corporations to take all these loopholes, exceptions, R&D credits, what have you, that you just go back and increase the rate, which is a much more straightforward idea. But it doesn't get at what Carl is suggesting, which is these companies that have this global income, and we could just target a specific type of company that publicly reports profits in excess of $100 million.
We have a question here from Paula in Hudson, Wisconsin. She says, Wisconsin is capping property tax at $10,000. I was wondering if the guests had any thoughts on why that is and what it means. Paula, I think, Carolyn, correct me if this isn't right, I think that's where the cap is for being able to deduct the property taxes, isn't it?
Your state and local taxes, right?
Yeah.
And you get to deduct up to $10,000 of your state and local taxes overall, and that is a combination of your property and your employment taxes. So me in Washington, D.C., I don't pay property taxes because I rent, but my husband and I, we paid, you know, very high rates of taxes to D.C. on our employment income, on our wage income. And so the property tax cap didn't affect us, but we sure got hit by not being able to deduct our, you know, D.C. wage income taxes. And so now for the first time, we're going to take the standard deduction versus itemizing.
Really? Yeah. So, Paula, the answer is that was federal tax policy, and that was in this legislation that we're talking about this morning. To the phones, to Lynn in Stillwater. Hi, Lynn. I don't have very much to go here in the show. Can you ask your questions pretty quickly?
Yeah, just two questions.
Okay.
One is that a lot of deductions went away, like for your 401, your IRA went away, and work-related expenses went away. Also, number two is if all these companies aren't paying taxes, what's going to happen? Is the country going to go bankrupt? I mean, already in Minnesota, we've seen a reduction in the surplus.
Okay. Because you're saying that the tax rates went down for these companies. Carl, first on this IRA deduction, what can you say about that?
Well, I mean, most of the deductions that got cut back, so she mentioned business expense deductions, for example, and a lot of the action was in itemized deductions. This category of deductions you can choose to claim instead of the standard deduction. So that was the capping of property tax and income tax deductions, and the elimination of the business expense deductions for individuals. What was, you know, a lot of this was billed as simplification. You wipe out these tax benefits for people, and there are suddenly fewer lines on the income tax forms, and everything is much simpler, right? That was the theory. They claimed you'd be able to file on a postcard, which turned out to be not remotely true. The forms are at least as complicated as before, if not more so, because they've moved so much stuff onto extra schedules to make it look like the main form is shorter. But, you know, from a wiping out deductions and making things simpler perspective, the main change that people are going to see is that they don't need to bother keeping track of their charitable donations anymore, because most people aren't going to get to deduct those anymore. About 20 million people are no longer getting the charitable deduction or the mortgage interest deduction or the state and local tax deduction. They're going to claim standard deduction instead. Now, right. You know, simplification perspective, it was never that hard to deduct your property tax or your mortgage interest or your state tax bill. You get that information on one piece of paper, and that's pretty simple. It was really your charitable deductions, keeping track of those all through the year, that was more complicated. And so that was the big simplification benefit.
Yeah, when they talk about simplification, I don't believe it. Carolyn, just in the 2 minutes I have left, she was asking about what happens with these companies not paying, you know, into these corporate income taxes. What would be the effect? I think she was wanting to ask about the communities in which these companies are in.
Well, so I think the national impact we're already starting to see, because in March, Treasury released new data that showed that our deficit, which is the difference between the amount of revenue that we take in and how much that we spend on an annualized basis, had increased 77% over the same period from October to January of 2017. It increased 77% in 2018. We are taking in less money. We are still spending money. Our deficits are going to increase. Now, the response to that was, well, there's going to be increased growth as a result of reduced taxes that will cover the difference and generate more tax revenue. We haven't seen that to be true. There's been plenty of analysis that's been done that has shown that that growth is not going to be able to cover what this tax cut bill is going to cost U.S. taxpayers. And we are essentially kicking down the road very difficult questions that we're going to have about what we're going to do about our deficit and debt going forward and what we're going to choose to spend our money on, because there's just frankly going to be less of it.
Carolyn Carl, thank you much for fielding all the questions and bringing some clarity to the conversation. This is complicated. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
You just heard a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet us at @CarrieNPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all our shows by subscribing to this podcast. You can send us your questions or comments by emailing talk@npr.org.